Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Toddcast. I am John, your normal host, as always. With me, as usually, is Bo.
How we doing, everybody?
And tonight we have the creative team of Shino Cage. One second. Stupid Facebook. Boom. All right. So I've known these guys for a while, or at least two out of the three. So we have Neil Davis, who has written the book and is a fellow shop, comic shop guy down in Altoona at the Comic Vault. How's it going, Neil?
Good, John. Thanks for having me on.
No problem, man. We have Gus Mock, who did, as I understand, almost all of the art, correct?
Yeah.
Cool, cool. And then we have Mike Yucatis. Did I say it right?
Yucatis.
Yucatis? That's close. So close. Yes.
Yeah. Everybody's always close. Not
yeah. And you you also worked on some of the art, as I understand, correct?
As the colorist, strictly.
Oh, yeah. Excellent. Excellent. Awesome. So this is kind of fun. We've never had a full creative team. We've had single artists on, but we've never had full creative team. So we're going to shake up how we do stuff on the show. First thing, though, I want to thank all of our, like anybody who shopped at a local comic shop for local comic shop day, for Black Friday. Anybody
hunker down sale.
Yeah. We had our crazy hunker down sale.
A bunch.
You know, anybody who shopped at any local comic shop, because we all need your support and we really appreciate it. So, all right, guys. So we're going to go through a little bit of an origin story. That's what we like to do. So we're going to start with Neil, and you're going to kind of tell us how you got into writing books and how you got into comics. And then we'll go to Gus, and then we'll go to Mike, and then we'll talk about the book itself a little bit. And then we'll talk about a little more about how you guys got intermixed with the guys at Black Box. All right. So, Neil, origin story.
Yeah, sure. It all started back when I was in high school. Me and my best friend, Mike, we would trade this notebook around. And it had a character in there who was a samurai slash ninja. And the idea was to put our main character in a position that the other guy would have to get him out of. Be little stick figures or some illustrations. Mostly we tried to emulate comic book style. When he passed his book back and forth, it was just a fun way to spend a year. And then a couple years ago, he surprised me. He sent me a package in the mail, and it had a copyright for the character that we had created.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And I'm like, we should do something with this. So we went back to all the old notebooks. There was a big stack, maybe 10 of them. We started flipping through pages to figure out where this guy came from, because I had forgotten a lot of that stuff. And we drug out some details that would make a decent story. And I started writing it, and I kind of sat on it for a little bit. I've known Gus for a long time. He would come into the shop and steal Hawkman books off the shelf. So I asked him if he'd be interested in something like this. I shared the script with him. And that was kind of it. It's been brewing for a long time. Certainly unpublishable as we did it back then. We really had to filter out a lot of the nonsense stuff. But the inspiration was all things that I was into in high school. Kurosawa VHS tapes and side-scrolling video games. That's what I feel like the book feels like.
Nice. So it's almost like a... got it like a shinobi type feel, then, is what you would say?
I mean, I don't want to give too much away, but the guy needs to take his place among the samurai of the region, and to do that, he's got to pass a test that all the samurai have had to do. Cool. So the first part of the arc is just him running through this trial, trying to prove to himself that he's, you know, worthy to take that spot.
Cool. I mean, when I think of side-scrolling ninjas, that's the one thing I think of is ninja. I guess either Shinobi or Ninja Gaiden
would be the two. Right. Yeah, those are the games that I was playing when I was writing this. So
that's awesome. That's awesome. So and you also if you want to, you know, pitch your store at all, you can go ahead and do that too. We support all local shops here. So, oh, come on. Well, then I'll do it. So it's it's downtown Altoona, PA. It's in an old bank, which is awesome because you actually have the vault open for stuff, which is cool.
Yeah, I always said if I was going to have a comic book store, I was going to call it Heroes for Sale. But then I found this location. It isn't an old bank. The building was built in 1930 as a bank. The bank vault is legit. Like you said, the door weighs like 3,000 pounds. And we've been here for like 5 years. I'm having a lot of fun.
That's awesome. I've been down there a couple times. It's a really great shop. I have a lot of friends who also play games in your store too, which is good.
Right. So,
cool. All right, Gus, origin story.
Well, first of all, Neil's being way too humble. This store is awesome. It's got like 30-foot ceilings. You could put a basketball court in this inside there.
You could. I mean, if you guys ever want to have intramurals, I can put an NDC team together and we can come down and play ball in the store.
And he's got more original art in there than you know I've ever seen in the store. He's got all of his walls are full all the way up to the ceiling. Plus, he's got like four portfolios in the back hidden away full of art. So he's got a lot of stuff in there.
Nice.
But just to like piggyback off what Neil was saying about the story he had written. So this is just a little story about like how we did this. I just went in the store one day and we were sitting there bullshitting. I was drawing like we always do. And I said, man, I was like, I'm going to get laid off from my job. I'm going to have a lot of time here. I'm going back to school. I was like, we should do a comic or something. We should do something. And he's like, well, I kind of have something written, you know, not really telling me all the stuff that he already had. I went home, went to sleep. The next day I woke up and I had an email and Neil already had this awesome script, like, like done, like everything was already done. I was like, holy crap, did you do this last night? He's like, oh, I had it for a while. So that's kind of how, you know, we kind of got it.
He's had to have enough drinks to actually hit send on the email, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, wow, this is really good for one night. Like, you know, I thought he had it all done in one night and here he had it, you know, right. For a while.
Now, see, that's actually the thing you should always tell the publisher, though, is, yeah, I can do this all in one night. Look what happened, right? Because I'm sure they'd be like, sweet, this guy can hit deadlines. DC will never hire you because of that. Gus, you've also like set up at shows as your own art stuff.
Yeah.
How long have you been doing that? Like, what's some of your inspiration? What's your background in your art? And where did you kind of
get that from? Since there was nothing this year, this would have been my eighth year like doing shows and stuff. My first 3 or 4 years that I did shows, I never went and did like an actual convention. I would just go as a fan. I would never set up at a convention. I always would do like more like portrait stuff and go like trade shows, like outdoor fall festivals and things like that. And I just never really thought I could go and do regular Comic Cons because I don't color digitally. I can barely color anything traditionally. So I just didn't think there was a market there for anything that I had. And then I just kind of did it one time because we were going to go to the show anyway. I thought, well, screw it. We'll just go and see what happens. And it went over pretty good. So then ever since then, I was a little more comfortable to, you know, set up at shows now.
That's awesome. I mean, personally, I love people who actually physically draw more than digital stuff, just as a personal. Because, like, if I get a sketch from somebody, I want it. I don't want them to, like, mail me a print. I don't even like to buy prints, period. I like to get like sketches and blank covers and stuff like that. I started collecting like original art pages. I have a bunch of stuff from like Scott McDaniel because he's like a good friend of mine. And I've loved him since he was on Nightwing. So
and like when you go to those shows and you're like walking down the aisles and you see somebody that has like, you know, some like watercolor stuff that may look a little bit flatter compared to somebody that like a Greg Horn or somebody that has stuff like stacked to the roof, you know, that everything is so bright and so colorful. It's hard competition there. And like that kind of stuff can like maybe make some a little uncomfortable that like maybe they won't be able to compete with like a Greg Horn or some people, but there is definitely a market for people that sketch right there in the spot. And do everything.
I always joke that Greg's booth looks like a tanning booth.
Yeah.
Because it's like there's just so many freaking lights going on there.
Yeah.
It's like it's like a beacon in the middle of the floor. Like,
yeah. Yeah. I've never had to set up near him yet. Thank God. I mean, I kind of hope that that day never comes, because like that booth is just so like attention grabbing.
Yeah.
And he, I mean, he is like the nicest dude that I have ever met at a Comic Con by far, 100%. No contest. So
I remember being at the first Keystone Comic Con in Philly. I was helping a buddy out at his booth, and we were across the hall from Greg Horn. And so we got to kind of hang out with Greg and his crew most of the show, because it wasn't super busy. It was a first year show. And they were super cool guys, like really, really down to earth. And I watched him, like, he was the first guy I ever saw draw on a pop vinyl box.
Oh yeah.
Like where he had like a Storm pop and he like drew Storm on it. And then like, it would be like, I don't know, like Harley Quinn, and he would draw Harley on it. And then he would be like, this pop is now $150. But it's something I see a lot of people do now, which is also really cool. So that's kind of the way I go with that. But yeah, he is one of the nicest dudes ever. I love his art. I loved his do you guys remember his Emma Frost book that he did? The like, it ended up being like an all ages style digest when they put it together. He did these killer covers for it. That's one of my favorite things. That and Marvel, when he did the Marvel books, those were also pretty sweet. So cool. All right, Mike, your turn. What is your origin story? Where are you from? What do you do?
Well, I live in Central California in a town called Merced. It's in the middle of the Central Valley, in the middle of nowhere. I've been working as an indie comic artist almost full time for the last 10 years or so. That in combination with like graphic design and stuff. I actually got my start on Craigslist. Just replying to people on Craigslist looking for comic artists in the area. And probably did that for like the first, I don't know, 3 or 4 years, and slowly started branching out to other forums and stuff like that. And then eventually social media activity started picking up. And now like I make my living as a comic artist, which is great. And then earlier this year, Gus reached out to me, I think it was on Instagram, interested in me coloring their book. And Instagram is like the worst place to contact me. Instagram and Twitter, I'm not super active on. Like, I'm on there, but I'm on Instagram sort of, but like Facebook is a better place to reach me. So I think I didn't even see his message at first, and he had to, didn't you have to reach out to me on Facebook?
On Facebook, yeah.
Yeah. And that's finally where I saw your message. And yeah, they hit me up interested in me coloring their book, and I was super flattered. It looked really cool. That's and awesome. I said yeah, and we've been working on it ever since, and it's been really good, really good experience, very rewarding so far.
That's awesome.
Well, this is it's a creator-owned title, so I kind of had to do everything here. We actually, Gus and I, we had colored the whole book number one completely, and we just weren't really thrilled with the way it turned out. And then I'm looking, I'm like, oh, I just cut this check, do we really want to recolor it? And it was in the back of my mind, and I was just cruising, and I was actually searching Daredevil images at this time, because I'm a big Daredevil fan. And I saw this Daredevil that Michael had done. I forget where I found it. It was on Facebook maybe, and it was just
so that's what it was
on point. It was gorgeous. Yeah, it was beautiful. And if you still have that original piece, I'd like to buy it.
Oh man, you should have asked me like 2 weeks ago. I just sold it.
Oh, congrats! I
just sold it.
So that's how we found Michael. I was just, we were looking for a colorist because we just weren't happy with book number one.
We were actually in the middle of looking for other colorists and like kind of like vetting other colorists while we found Michael. Like we sent out like 2 or 3 pages that we thought looked the worst in our book that was first colored, and had like a couple other people color it, and they sent them back, and we're like, well, it's still not the look we're going for. We're kind of going for that like the Dark Tower that Jay Lee and Richard Eisenbaum did. That was the look that we were looking for this book. And the colors that we originally had were just a little too flat, a little too like superhero comic vibe type and we wanted a little bit of a darker tone. And Neil showed me that picture, and I was like, let's see what, you know, see if the guy even will talk to us. Right. And, you know, he was like super nice. Yeah. And he like, nice. Yeah. And he, yeah. So Michael, like I tell him all the time, it's like a joke, like Michael saved this book, because if we wouldn't have had him to color it, like to color the way he colored it, right. I think Neil and I would have probably been like, we like the book, but the colors just aren't really working for us. But, you know, nice. Now we're like, as long as Michael colors it, the book will be fine.
Well, thank you very much, guys. I appreciate that a lot. It's very flattering, but, you know, good colors only go so far. It takes really good art and good colors together to make something pop. But yeah, I took it as a huge compliment when you compared me to Richard Eisenhoff early on. And it's funny, like I keep a copy of the first Dark Tower book by my desk at all time. This is like my go-to for when I'm stuck on a page and I need some inspiration. That's the first thing I open up is Dark Tower.
That's so awesome. So Michael, you're the first colorist we've had on here. We've had a couple other artists. We've had a couple other writers. We've even had a letterer on the show. Wow. So how does one decide to be a colorist versus like a line artist, and how does one learn that craft? Because like a lot of guys we know went through like Comics Experience. So I'm just, you know, I guarantee somebody's going to listen to this and be like, I want to know what it takes to become a colorist. I'm kind of interested in that. So how do you get into coloring? How did you decide to be a colorist? And that kind of, and how did you learn your craft? Cause that's really a different thing. You know, everybody's like, oh, I always want to be either Stanley or Jack Kirby, but you know, nobody ever goes, I want to be the colorist. Right. So how did that work out for you?
Well, it's funny. I don't consider myself a colorist. This is only the second time maybe third, I'm not sure, that I've colored work for other people. I usually color my own stuff. I'm usually like an all-in-one artist. I usually do pencils, inks, colors, letters, all that stuff. I'm like an all-in-one package. It's kind of how I advertise myself, my services. There's only been a couple other instances where I've only done colors for other artists. So, but it's funny because like I really enjoy it. It's something I want to expand on. I've actually been thinking about hitting up people and saying, hey, like I'm trying to find more coloring work if you're interested. So as far as like finding work strictly as a colorist, I don't know, like they reached out to me. I didn't advertise myself as a colorist. So it's cool that it just worked out the way it did. But more to your question, like I'm almost entirely self-taught. Like I always took art classes in school and in community college and stuff like that, but I didn't go to sequential art school or any art school beyond, you know, cheap stuff, local stuff. Most of what I've learned, I've just trial and error, or YouTube is like the best resource in the world. And just looking at the art that inspires me, you know, imitation is the best form of flattery. And, like my big thing that I try to instill into younger artists is don't get too hung up on originality. Originality is actually overrated. Like focus on just doing the best you can, even if it's imitating somebody else, and you will create your own style out of that. And it's something that I'm still trying to work on myself. Like I'm still trying to find my own style and my own voice with my art. I'm constantly looking at, you know, Jay Lee or Richard Eisenhoff or Mike Mayhew, all kinds of artists that I really like. And just comparing myself to them. It's so hard not to compare yourself to them, but you know, it's sometimes it's okay to, you know, just imitate somebody else to a certain extent and just build upon that, essentially. Right. But yeah, I'm pretty much self-taught is the short answer.
That's pretty awesome. You know, as a musician, like I'm a musician first before I'm a comic fan. I totally understand the you know, you always were trying to find your niche and how you fit in. Mostly guitar, but I play bass, mandolin. Those are the ones I'm proficient the most at. I haven't played mandolin in a while.
I envy anybody who could play anything because I can't play anything.
It's all good. So, but it's a lot of fun. Like that's where I consider my craft. So I totally understand like honing your craft, and you got to keep practicing every day, or else you're never going to get to the level you want, and you're probably never going to get to the level you want if you're any good at it. So if that makes sense. All right, so let's hear about Shino Cage. What's the story? What's like the real deal behind it? Why should people check this out? Neil, you want to go first?
I think, like I said before, I wrote this thinking of Kurosawa black and white movies. I wrote this thinking of original Nintendo side crawling fighting games. And when I was growing up, I'd go to the comic book shop or the grocery store, and I'd see the symbol on the cover that just said Battle Issue. Mm-hmm. And that grabbed me for some reason. The first three books in this arc, everything is hinted at is really just about fighting. We try to grab the audience, to suck them in with a lot of blood, a lot of sword swipes. And once we have them, then I can take them where they want to go, which is espionage, intrigue, political upheaval in this countryside. But you can't just do that right off the bat. It's gotta be action packed at first. And I think he did a good job with that. Gus really brings the people in with his action. He's pretty good at not just like drawing splash pages with someone looking like a badass, but the action, the blood splatter, he's on point.
Cool. So like he actually does like a visual narrative as much as the words do the story narrative.
Yeah, and I gave him pretty little direction. I kind of told him what I wanted the characters to look like, and I said, "What do you want to draw?" He said, "I want to draw a giant with bodies hanging around his neck as a necklace." I'm like, "All right, do it." You know, I asked him what he would like to draw, how he saw this scene, and for the most part, I agreed with everything that he did, and he took off.
That's awesome. Cool. So I guess that kind of answers some of the question I was going to ask Gus, which was going to be like, how did you decide on the character design? When you were creating it, did you find, oh man, I really love how this sticks with this character. It works really well for them and made it kind of like an iconic look or anything like that?
No, I mean, I without spoiling too much, the design of the character will change a little bit, like throughout the course of the book.
Okay.
And throughout other issues. So I guess I just wanted to make something that looked natural of what someone would maybe wear on his like quest, and also something that wasn't going to take a 6 hours per panel to draw, you know. So
you're not trying to pull the Greg Capullo, like following him on Twitter, and he's just like, I finished a panel, and like a day later it's like, I finished a panel.
Yeah, no, it was this was the first time I ever did any type of interior stuff at all, and it wasn't so much like conveying the story or getting the point across that was difficult for me. The most difficult part was keeping things like consistent, like trying to make everything as consistent as possible with what he looked like in the panel before.
Okay. I mean, that's definitely something like editors look for. I know that. Yeah. That's cool. So did you go, I want this to be like, cause some writers do this, like they're like, I want this to be a 6-panel page with this, 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 and this, or was it kind of like a flow between the both of you?
I started like that, but you can't tell Gus that kind of stuff. I got to plot it out where everything's going to go down to where the speech bubble is. He throws that over his shoulder. He's like, I'm going to do it my way. And
I was going to have the same question, by the way.
I wanted it to be, he starts off this whole arc idealistic. He wants to do right by his clan. He wants to do right by his family. He wants to prove himself. And as he starts progressing, he's understanding that maybe that way isn't the best for what he needs to achieve. And he gets torn up, and there's battle damage in every panel, which I love. So that's what Gus means by consistency, losing pieces of armor and making sure that you don't redraw that piece of armor that got busted.
Yeah. Make sure there's a cut on his skin where it was, you know, 2 pages ago. That cut is still there.
Yeah, don't forget about the battle damage, right? Yeah. Like that's pretty awesome. Yeah, because you know, we've never like, again, this is the first time we've had a full creative team on, so it's always cool to hear how things kind of progressed in the creation of everything.
I don't know how it would work with like a normal writer or a normal like crew or how they do it, but when me and Neil do it, it's fun. Like, he'll say, hey, what do you think about this? And everything, like, man, that's really awesome. Like, you know, I didn't think Neil would be smart enough to come up with such a slick move here. And then we'll try to figure out how we want to kind of portray it. And yeah, he'll say maybe three or four panels here, and then we'll just kind of go from there. So it was a lot of brainstorming that went into it. That, you know, Neil and I agree on like 99% of everything that we kind of do.
Awesome.
And it's nice that he's so close too, because we did storyboards here in the shop. Yeah. Gus would bring his satchel in. He'd set up at a table during the day. I'd take care of a couple customers and walk over, see what he's working on. Like, oh, that storyboard looks pretty good. What if we move this panel down here? Cut this in half and make this into a splash page instead. He'd draw it out, and it just worked. When we can be here all day working together, it just makes things so easy.
Yeah.
Cool. Michael,
I'm glad you guys are talking about this, because as I'm coloring it, I'm wondering this very topic, like, because some of the action is so like specific and nuanced, and I'm like, did Neil really envision this and tell Gus how to draw it, or did they go like more the Marvel method and maybe Gus drew it and then Neil kind of filled in the blanks? Like, so I'm glad you guys are going over this. I was wondering about it.
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. Like, I think there's some things that he definitely wants to see that we make sure we have in there. And there's some things that I really want to draw that, you know, he'll let me put in there. And then we just let you color it, and then it looks perfect.
So, Michael, are you using the same basic color patterns that they had already chosen out, or did you mix some stuff up?
No, I mean, sort of. Like, there were certain guidelines to adhere to, like the costume of the main character, you know, the basic look of his outfit, you know, obviously I have to stay in line with that. But no, they gave me a lot of freedom, which was great.
That's awesome.
I just did what I thought was best, and 99% of the time it worked. They were happy with it, which is really cool.
Let me just started to say this, but this is also something funny. The first guy that colored it, he'd send us back a page, and Neil and I would send him like five edits, like five different times. We'd have to say, you're going to have to fix this. He'd send it back. Okay, you're going to have to fix this. With Michael, there's never usually more than one edit. Sometimes there's never any edits at all. It's usually one time. Like, he like nails it every time.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you.
It's awesome. Cool. All right. So go ahead, Neil.
I will mention to Michael that I hope as we continue the next arc, book 4, 5, and 6, that I get the same color rate that I'm getting now from him. I think he's going to blow up, and I think he's going to have a line of work that's going to last him for years.
I hope you're right, but, you know,
we've been stressing.
I value client loyalty a lot. So you're locked in for a while, I'd say.
Well, the cool part, I this is a great segue into the Black Box, is I've gotten to know a lot of smaller publishers over the years, and a lot of the times they'll use the same in-house people for a lot of stuff, even if they are creator-owned projects. So, you know, there may be something where they get something submitted where they may not like the coloring, and they may reach out to you to fix that. Or there may be like, you know what, I really like what Neil's doing here with his writing. Let's see if he pairs up with this guy. So you might see some of that, but you may not. I mean, I know there's still kind of a bit of a fledgling, because Black Box has only been around for, I think, 3 or 4 years. Because IT came out, the first IT came out in like 2016, I think. So that would have been 4 or 5 years ago. And that was their pilot book. So how did you guys... I almost wore my IT shirt today because I own a Black Box t-shirt. I have a Black Box pen laying around here somewhere. I've been hooked up. Anyway,
well, two of us are rocking the Chino Cage shirts.
That's awesome.
Which I love this shirt. This is like my new favorite shirt.
So how did you guys get in with Black Box? Like, did you submit online? Did you go to a con? was Dimitri like, hey guys, this is freaking baller? Was it Scott? Like, who did you get to talk to? And how did it play out?
There's a lot of hustle that goes into trying to pitch a publisher your comic book. I mean, we made the rounds. I mean, I got rejection letters from a lot of publishers. And then a lot of publishers were like, I'd like to see more. Some publishers were like, yeah, this is good. I think we can do something here. And their deal just didn't work for us. So eventually I just, Black Box was on the list. I called them up. Demetrius is who I contacted. First I led in with, hey, I want to buy some of your Black Box books to put on my shelves. And by the way, why don't you give this a peep and, you know, see if this is something you might be interested in. He called me the next day.
Good strategy.
He's like, I think we might be able to do something here. Let me see some more. And, when it came down to the contract, it worked for us. He's given us a lot of freedom, and I don't think Black Box is going to be small time for very long. They have some great titles right now, and they're just getting bigger and bigger. They're going to be big time here pretty soon.
Yeah, I know Psycho List was one of their newer releases, and that did really well for us too.
Yep.
What was the other one between IT and Psycho List?
They have Militia.
Oh yeah, that was really good.
The Dixon book. They have Biggs and Tiny and Devil's Dominion now. Those are really good sellers too.
Yeah, Biggs and Tiny did really well too.
Yeah, they have some really good titles. So we did it just like anyone else would. It wasn't like I got Gus is a good artist. It's not like he got us in the door anywhere. We still had to, go knocking.
Yeah, right. No, it's cool because some publishers don't they don't take it unless they don't even look at your submission unless you have two full books done. I just didn't know like if you guys submitted the original coloring or the newer coloring, or like if you just pitched the idea, and if you were like did it like, because I know guys that pitch them at shows, I know guys that do it online, and it's also cool like to see some guys I know get onto a publisher that I know, like I've hung out with Dimitri he's been to Three Rivers. I one time was at New York and I was walking around and he was like, they always set up way on the other side of the vendor hall. Like they're upstairs, but they're like way over by like the Funko booth and right. Like way on the last thing. I was like walked over there to see if Scott and Dimitri were there, and Dimitri was there. So I just like hung out with them for like 2 hours at their booth and was like selling their books for them, like helping them sell books at New York Comic Con. But they're great guys. And, and Scott obviously is a Pittsburgh legend. And he did if you've ever seen our Batman Over the City logo that we use, like on our pull-up banners, like he did that art and stuff like that. And he's, he's also super great. The crazier part, and I think the reason why like I love them so much is that they're family guys. Like Dimitri brought his whole family to Pittsburgh when they did Three Rivers. And if you've been to a con to see Scott McDaniel, he brings his mom. His mom insists on coming everywhere. and Mama McD is the con mom. Last time I saw her, I was at our show and I was talking to somebody beside them at a booth and I just hear, John, get over here and give me a hug. So, and they're family. So I assume they're going to treat you guys like family. And I think that's going to be a key thing to make everybody on their publishing end successful. So, we wish you guys the best of luck with this book. And I know, we definitely ordered some for all the stores. We'll see how it goes. And, issue two is in the December previews, right?
Yeah, that's right. Being solicited now for a February release.
Cool.
And Black Box kind of does this cool thing where after they do an arc, they take a break. They slot in, a volume two of something, or they slot in a new title. They're not just like cramming out issues. They're going to make sure that we're happy with how it turned out. They're not going to say, I need issue number four by June, have it done. Like, when does it feel comfortable for you? We have, this on our schedule. We'd like to slide in there. Is that okay with you? Let us know what you're thinking. There's nothing but great things to say about Black Box at this point.
Awesome. Cool. All right. I think at this point, Bo, do you have any questions for these guys? Because I think at this point, we're going to talk about some of this week's comics for a little bit.
Talk about some books.
All right. I'm going to talk about Erratic number one from AWA. This book came out yesterday. I'm really kind of 50-50 on this book because I like a lot of the stuff that AWA is putting out, and I do like what this book kind of is. The art in it is epically good to me. Like it's somewhere between like manga and like normal, like just like traditional art. Like here you can see like her face. It's kind of like in between that. And I like the coloring in it. The story's pretty good. It gets kind of draggy in the middle. Cause it's basically a kid who it's going to be a Spider-Man style story. It's a high school kid. He gets a job at a lab, you know, things happen. They can't make ends meet. He gets the job at the lab to help out his mom. There was some kind of quarantine and a lot of people died. I'm expecting us to find out that those 10 kids that died become the crazy monsters. I'm expecting to find that out. Like the principal's kind of a villain. It's kind of neat, but it has like a really familiar Spider-Man vibe. That I'm just like, I don't know if I need another Spider-Man in the world. That's my only down part on it. Other than that, I thought it was a very good book. But it's a 5-part number one, came out this week. Check it out at your local shop. What do you got, Bo?
Speaking of Spider-Man, I don't want to hear too much about them, but I don't have the book. King of Black, you guys can see that. That was obviously the big book of the week, and I've been focusing so much on indie stuff because indie's just better, in my opinion. I have more interesting stories at the moment, but King of Black, I had to check it out to see what was going on because Nall's making his big comeback. Donny Cates, the hype man of the comic book world, is, you know, writing it. First impressions of it, I hope it's better than Absolute Carnage. Hope it doesn't leave it's kind of flat. I hope it's better. But Nall is, I don't know how to really feel about Nall. Nall was like Marvel's answer to Batman Who Laughs, and then Batman Who Laughs was just a knockoff of Judge Death and whatnot. So seems like he's just kind of keeping up with the times, but see how it starts out. And I recommend everybody does check it out. The first issue was pretty action packed. That's basically all it was. Nall comes to Earth. Some stuff happens with the Sentry, which was made the book for me, which is really cool. And see where it goes, but check it out. That's the big book of the year that everybody's gonna, or the big book at the moment that's crossing over and everything. So people check it out. It was a good first issue.
Does Stegman still do the art on that?
It is. The art's fantastic. That is the one thing that never fails. So I don't know. I just want to see more from. I want to see Donny Cates stick a landing on a book before, you know. I always feel he falls a little flat. Starts off and is awesome, then falls a little flat. Somehow I got high hopes for this book. So,
right, yeah, I'm gonna read that tomorrow. Mike, you were also playing the game of what we read this week. So, what? Give us a review of something you read.
Well, this came out a week or two ago, I suppose. But I'm really into the Department of Truth. This is number three. Nice. I just got it a few days ago, so it's new to me. Yeah, this has been a fantastic series so far. Definitely my favorite book of 2020. And for anybody who hasn't checked it out yet, it goes really deep into some conspiracy theory stuff. Usually conspiracy theory books are kind of lame. They don't go too deep into things. They're a little cliche. But this one, Department of Truth, like they dealt with it. This particular issue, there's references to the Sandy Hook shooting, the school shooting, and Alex Jones and the accusations he made. Like nothing is named in the book, like so they don't say his name or the name of the school or the town or anything like that. There's just the implication of this is what they're talking about, and it was some pretty heart-wrenching stuff, which can be kind of hard to find these days in comics when something actually really triggers an emotion in you other than excitement. But yeah, Department of Truth, number three. I mean, the whole series so far has been great, but you could pick it up even at number three and be fine. Like, you won't be lost, I don't think.
It is probably the best book. Probably, I think it's like a book of the year type of deal. Like, it's that sure. good. It's that's the second. I mean, they had like just a lot. It could be controversial. You know, people could be offended by it, you know, or whatnot. But it's so good. They are really good.
Yeah,
so.
I'm loving the way they kind of incorporate brainwashing into it, and they kind of also wrap up like sort of the law of attraction is sort of a theme within the book in a certain way. But yeah, it's great. I think it's the best book of the year for sure.
Awesome. Gus or Neil, do you have anything you want to, that you've read that came out recently?
Sure. I'll talk about the Daredevil book this week. Nice. I'm a Daredevil fan and I read that book all the time. So I kind of saw this big event kind of ahead of time, but for people that don't read Daredevil, they get something in a news feed that said, hey, you better buy this book because if you're a speculator, it's going to be a $20 book on Wednesday. So I was getting calls since Monday trying to grab this thing. And you know, those books go to the local guys first, the people that come in and read Daredevil every month. But I liked it. I thought it was good. Matty Murdock is now in prison. He's serving two years for manslaughter. So someone else has to pick up the mantle of the devil. And it's a surprise character that does it, and she's going to be around for a while. So I think that's the pickup this week if you can find a copy.
Cool. That's awesome. Gus, did you read anything this week yet?
No.
Okay.
I'm actually more of a manga guy when it comes to reading.
That's cool. Nothing wrong with that. All right. Then my next book is The Union, number one, also from Marvel. So I'm not super reading, like, I'm not super into the King in Black stuff, but I checked this book out mostly because I like Union Jack. And surprise, he is the main character in this book. It really is interesting because basically, like, he's on a team basically playing capture the flag against Britannia, which is also kind of interesting. And they're on like almost like a Survivor style TV media thing, and like Scream's on the team, but she's called the Choir now. And there's snakes and kelpie, and she can kind of control water. But it's all of a sudden this giant horned dragon shows up, and Britannia kicks its ass. But in kicking its ass, it kind of maims her pretty hard. But the thing that no one noticed when it flew by was that it was infected with a symbiote. So now it's infecting other guys that were there around them when they were doing this. And it shows like a null army, basically. So I'm kind of excited to read the rest of that. Cause I love Union Jack. I've always liked Excalibur. So like the whole British teams, like I've just loved them in general. So it's been really good for me. But it does tie into the King in Black storyline. Not a ton. I imagine the next couple issues will be also tying in and be a little bit better. So check it out. It's pretty good. So, Bo, book two, go.
All right. We're going to stick with mainstream whatnot, but we're going to go DC's Batman and Catwoman. Tom King, what can you say about him? Hopefully he holds it together. I don't know how many issues this is, 1 to 10 or 12, something like that. Basically what I'm gathering is it's going to be the story that he never got to complete because he got kicked off Batman and, you know, Tyrion took over and whatnot. So hopefully we get to see what's going on with the Batman Catwoman marriage and whatnot. Again, like all Tom King books, it started out very strong. I really enjoyed the first issue, even though he bounces all over the place and I'm really, he just he's a crazy writer for me. He's all over the place sometimes, yeah, and very depressing and whatnot in different instances. But anyways, the best thing about it, it's basically Batman's dead, and Catwoman, Catwoman's older now, and she goes and visits the Joker in like a retirement home type of deal. And at the end of the book, they're the big thing for this was Phantasm was going to be in it. So that's kind of cool. You see his mask at the end of it. Cool. So that's what kicked it over for me. So I hope he holds it together and comes out with a good, has a good series for it. So, cause I was intrigued wanting to see what was going on with that, see if Bruce can find some happiness for a while. So not be taken away. So
nice.
But I liked it. Good start for him.
Cool. Yeah. I was having a discussion with somebody about Tom King yesterday, because we were both talking about how we want to read this book, but neither of us liked his Batman. But we both liked his Mr. Miracle. We both liked his Vision. We both like his Strange Adventures. And I'm like, I think it's because it's a limited series is why I think he does well with it, because he can only get so many issues to jam a story into. So it gets him to really focus on making it a good story. And that's why I think this book will turn out a lot better. Like, I think his Batman, he had a little too much like
it was
time frame to stretch it out. Same with like when he did Grayson, it was a little stretched out. So it kind of was a little hit or miss for me. And I did not read Heroes in Crisis, although I hear it's very good. I know Bo talks about it a lot.
I did. I mainly just like the covers. Like, I liked, I just liked the artwork. I thought the artwork was awesome for Heroes in Crisis. Same way with this, the Batman and Catwoman. But I don't know. He needs the whole, they need to tell him, you got to wrap this up in 6 to 8. Like, put him on a limit. So he gets filler issues, and he kills me with filler issues. Like, it's bad with that dude. So he needs to stop. So
I will also applaud you for picking the two books that had the most variants this week.
Did. And I bought both the sketches because my King in Black, my King in Black's off with a buddy being sketched on because they made black covers. So
yeah.
I've been liking the sketch covers lately. That's why I got that one too. So
yeah, I kind of dug the reverse sketch cover idea.
Well, they're nice. They're not doing generic white covers anymore. And it's kind of nice just seeing them kind of mix it up. And if people want to do different backgrounds on them, it's cool. And all the companies are kind of doing that. So
yeah. I actually tried to get online last night and tried to find a white blank King in Black cover. And all they had were
black ones. Yeah. I wanted black with that silver Sharpie on there and silver mark, and then have it do a little null for me and something like that. So
that'd be pretty sweet. Mm-hmm. I have a Green Lantern blank for someone to do something with next year, hopefully next year when the world hopefully gets back to semi-normal, that I'm going to try to find somebody cool. I might hold on and have Barry Kitson do something because he's kind of on our potential to come back for the show. Whenever the show happens, he'll be one of the people there. And I would really like to have that because he did Justice League Year One. I actually have a page of it sitting right there, an original page out of it, and it's pretty sweet. So, all right, Michael, you had another one, right? You had a set of books, I believe, right?
Yeah, it's a set. So rather than just one, I'm going back to an oldie but a goodie, and that's the original Dune series from Marvel Comics
In
1984. I just got these off of eBay the other day, so it's new to me. I haven't even read them yet. I'm a huge Dune fan. It's one of my favorite books. Bill Sienkiewicz does the art. It's fantastic art. So I've only flipped through them just to check them out a little bit. But yeah, I'm really excited to dig into them. But the new graphic novel, I think, should have come out this week, right? Am I correct?
Well, the newest issue came out last week, House Atreides. Yeah.
You're talking about the graphic novel of the movie or of the novelization.
Correct. I've been getting House Atreides, and then there's the graphic novel, which I think somebody may be getting for me for Christmas, so that's why I didn't go out and get it yet. This is pretty relevant. Today I just found out that the new Dune movie, which I've been dying to see. Yes. Eagerly waiting for it for years now. I just found out it's going to HBO Max since all the theaters are closed, especially here in California. Yeah, that's cool that you know, there's some silver lining there. I really want to see it on the big screen, but I'll take what I can get. I'm a fan of Denis Villeneuve, however you pronounce his name, and it's got the best cast ever. So these comics, I'll read these, and then I'll wait to watch the movie on HBO Max, and then I'll go see it again when the theaters open up.
Nice. Yeah, I saw something about DC basically said their next whole wave of movies will be theater and HBO Max now, like same day.
Warner Brothers just announced that all their 2021 movies are going to be straight to streaming.
Maybe it was Warner Brothers in general. I thought it was just like DC.
That's like for theaters.
Well, I mean, it's not like they have a lot of option right now.
No, true. I mean, they got to survive. So theaters. Oof. So.
I know drive-ins have been a big boom again, which is cool.
I went to the drive-in a month or two ago for my birthday to see the original Carrie.
Awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was cool. You know, I always go to the theater on my birthday, so me and my fiance went to see Carrie. We both love that movie, and you know, it was great. But I wouldn't go to the drive-in to see a movie that I've been waiting for, like Doom. You know. Yeah. Like, it was just way too distracting with people parking and walking around and stuff. Like I would never go to see a new movie, but for some old school, you know, it's a great experience.
That's awesome. I think the last time I went to a drive-in, the first or second Hellboy was playing. So it's been a while. I just ran to New Mutants a couple weeks ago. That was killer for the $5. It was much better than, it's much better than what the critics were saying. Like, if you like, I don't know, the first 30 issues of the original New Mutants run, like through the Demon Bear story arc with Sienkiewicz, like you'll like the movie because it's pretty much like, how did I say this? It was like Dream Warriors, but with the New Mutants. Like,
I want to see it for sure.
Yeah, like. It's like the first time you see Ileana's arm go like armor with like the soul sword kick out. It's like I'm just thinking about it, I'm getting goosebumps again. Like that was like such a cool part of that movie. And everything with Magic and Wolfsbane was really, really well done. Everything with Mirage was really well done. They kind of underused Cannonball and they kind of underused Sunspot. And it was weird to see Dr. Reyes as like the bad guy because she's usually a good guy on the X-Men teams. So that was kind of cool. They twisted it a little bit with like the Essex Corporation with Mr. Sinister. So that was kind of neat. It was only like an hour and 40 minutes, but it was worth the $5 48-hour rental. Like I watched it twice just to make sure that I wasn't like confusing myself. I was like, I really did like this movie, right? I'll watch it again. So I watched it the second day and I still enjoyed it. So I was like, all right, you're a good movie. I like it. I thought of the Fox stuff, it was better than I'd say half the Fox stuff. It was probably mid-tier for the Fox stuff. So that's where I'd put it. So
some of the accents threw me a little bit.
Yeah.
Some of the accents were just a little bit off. I'm not a Maisie Williams fan very much, but I liked how they tried to make it kind of more like a horror movie.
Yeah, that's how I dug it too. Yeah. And like, I kind of like forgave the accent slips here and there because I was like at that point, it's almost like watching Dark Phoenix. Like, you know, you're watching Dark Phoenix and it's like, most of the movie's actually pretty good, and then the last 20 minutes they're like, oh, by the way, Disney bought Marvel back. Well, fuck, now we gotta like wrap this movie up and make it whatever, who cares? And that's kind of like the vibe I got at Dark Phoenix. But with this movie, it was almost like, we're just gonna have fun with this because it's the last one we get. And I thought they did a good job of conveying that, and I really enjoyed it. I know I've sold a hell of a lot of Demon Bear issues and trades weirdly we do the packs for like Ollie's and Five Below, and somebody screwed up and they put a first Lockheed on the front of one of these. And a buddy of mine on his podcast is like, I bought this pack at Ollie's and it had a first Lockheed on the front. And I'm just like, oh, so I had to fire somebody, I think. Oh, damn. And I said it to my boss. I was like, just so you know, like, this was on the front and somebody, like, at least somebody talked about it on their podcast and it was cool. He was like, is that book hot now? And I was like, yeah, Lockheed's in New Mutants and it's like a $15 book right now. And he's just like, oh, I didn't know. We have a ton of them. I'm like, all right, whatever. So, but because no one cared back in the day. So, all right, Neil, do you have a second book for this week or no?
Yeah, sure. Not a new one, but something that did rise to the top. We'll talk about, what was it? Marvel Premiere 9? Marvel, one
second. Oh, God. I already know what he's talking about.
Marvel Spotlight. Yeah. Marvel Spotlight came out this week, too. Like a 1980 book that apparently they're trying to shoehorn as the first symbiotes. You know, is in my dollar bin. People come kicking in my door. They're like, Mr. E.
Yeah.
It jumped from 50 cents to $100 like overnight.
What is that? Marvel Spotlight Captain Marvel or Captain Universe. That's what it was. Captain Universe. Terrible spec by you fools.
Yep.
So,
but I sold them all. So, $1 a piece, I guess.
All right. So, how's that sketch coming, Gus?
I don't know. I think I'm done.
Okay, let's see it. Ooh, look at that. Awesome. All right. So there are a whopping three people watching this live right now. So here's what we're going to do. The first person to email me the name of the book that I have the creators here for correctly with spacing. To JONENGL@ndcomics.com is gonna win that, and I'll pay for the ship. So,
Neil, are you sure you don't want it? I know you're a big Batman Who Laughs fan.
Neil's like, what was that email address? One more time.
He's making fun of me because I hate that character, and I would not. I wouldn't give him 2 cents for that book.
I am right there with you. Like, I always tell Bo, I'm like, so Judge Death?
It's a cheap knockoff of Judge Death. It really is. It's a shame.
I really don't understand the obsession. I just don't like the look of the character at all.
I think it's like people's weird obsession with Joker in general. Like,
what it is.
Yeah, and we all knew that this was going to happen. Like, that they were going to make a Batman Joker when they started doing the metal thing anyway. Like, we're like, okay, you get a Bat Flash, you get a Bat Lantern, you get a Bat Wonder Woman. Where's Bat Joker? You're going to get it. And I just thought it could have been better.
It isn't bad. I actually like the character. I think he looks cool just because he looks like Judge Death a lot. And then he's got the Robins chained up. That looks awesome. I don't care. That is cool. But this new stuff they're going with him, kind of making him a god. It's just terrible. But DC can do no wrong, so whatever.
I have never drawn this character and not sold it within 2 months. I'm not sitting on it very long when I draw it. Which is weird because, like you guys said, like it's not a very like cool. I don't know. I guess there's a big fan base of them.
Yeah. It's just weird, man. I mean, it's a lot of those people that love Joker. I think is the deal that you get with him. So, so one last crazy topic because we haven't done one of these in 2 weeks. So, is everybody caught up on Mandalorian?
Yes.
Okay. So let's.
I don't
so
watch it.
For okay, at all,
at all. There.
Okay.
I couldn't get into it. But you go ahead.
So for people who have not watched, chapter 15, 12, 15, whatever. It's the 12? Fifth issue, right? It was the fifth episode, right? Episode 5.
Yeah, I remember.
What? Okay. just stop listening, stop watching, just, you know, whatever. You're not going to miss much. We're going to talk about this for a few minutes. So okay. So my background is I watched the first season. I really wasn't super invested because I was like, this Baby Yoda thing is never going to pay off. Like, I feel like they're just stringing us along. Like, we're donkeys with a carrot. Like, it's never going to pay off. It's never going to pay off. And then, but I thought the action sequences were cool. I thought the world they were building was cool, but they just kept pushing the kid a little too much in the first season. This season, I like every other episode a lot. And the opposite episodes are kind of meh. Like, the first episode was killer. Second episode of the ice spider, outside of the ice spider, kind of meh. Then the third episode was killer. Fourth episode, outside of the macaroon scene, kind of meh. Fifth episode, fucking amazing. Like, how do we feel about Baby Yoda having a name?
I think they shouldn't have given him a name, or at least not the name that they gave him. But it's just my opinion, and I agree with everything that you just said about every other episode too.
Yeah,
I actually went into Neil's store last weekend, and he hasn't seen it yet. And I pretty much told him that 1 hour of Mandalorian that we watched last weekend, that episode 5 was probably the best television that I've seen in the last year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie, it's very top 5 it's minimum.
Anything else that was that close, I've forgotten.
Yeah, I mean that's really where I would put it too.
That episode took it.
Good. I was just gonna say the Eastern cinema influence in that episode were fantastic. The way she came through the fog, the way he walked into town, reminded me of, you know, A Fistful of Dollars. It was good. And I like that they gave him a name. Now everyone can stop calling it Baby Yoda, because that made me mad anyway, because it's not Yoda, you know?
Yeah.
Right. I think this season, the way they're utilizing him more as kind of like, he's very much Cub with Lone Wolf and Cub now. Yes. Like, you know, he's a little more like the thing that's going to get into trouble or do the stupid fun thing.
Yeah.
Compared to like focusing too much on the story. But oh my God, like that episode was so good. So good. We had an episode a couple weeks ago where we talked about boob armor. So from the Bo-Katan episode. So
it gave you so many, just Easter eggs and like ways for the universe to expand too. Mm-hmm. Like the Thrawn statement and whatnot was just awesome.
Oh my God.
Nobody expected that.
Oh, yeah. I almost had a heart attack when they said it. I was like, oh my God. Oh my God. Please do this. Please do this.
I mean, they're
going to get him.
There's just so much out there with it. So
yeah, I was just telling my girlfriend the other day, I hope they keep this going for multiple seasons, because it's nice to have a show that you can watch and every episode is its own thing. You start and you conclude an episode and it's its own story. You know, it's not like something like Breaking Bad where you have to watch that whole season to get any type of outcome. You know what I mean? Like, you start this episode and then you end this episode. There may be an underlying plot that goes all the way through to the end of the season, but you can be invested from the beginning to the end and you get a conclusion.
Yeah, I kind of feel like this season it's almost what you said. It's you guys ever watch like the original Buffy the Vampire Slayer, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so the first season is very monster of the week every week, no real big story arc. But the second season is there's this overarching story, still kind of monster of the weeky, but it all makes sense. And I feel that that's the vibe they got in the second season and made it work.
I compare it to like Supernatural, if you ever watch Supernatural.
Yeah, but even Supernatural for like the first couple seasons was very monster of the week.
Yeah.
Until like season 3, and then it got a lot better. And then I stopped watching it like season 5 because I just fell out of that. And I was like, Sarah Michelle Gellar, you're so much more hot. I will watch you. I told my wife, who's also named Michelle, that she would be the only woman I'd ever leave her for. So anyway. Anyway, we'll not talk about my love of Buffy anymore. But there was something else that came on TV this week. Or maybe they talked about it. Oh, I had it and I lost it. Anyway, that's pretty much all I got this week, I think. There's really not a lot of nerd news. I mean, DC didn't fire anybody else this week. Nothing imploded. And there was, besides the Daredevil book Neil talked about, I think that's pretty much all the super hot stuff. Oh, the King in Black random variants with the thing on it. Like, did you have a lot of people that hunted that down, Neil?
They did, but I stuck it in everyone who added it to their pull list so that people
good man.
That came into the store, you know, they couldn't like scoop it from someone who would give it a better home.
Hmm. You're a good man. You're a good man.
There's that Marvel snapshot, Civil War Marvel snapshot. There's a B cover for that that is highly desirable this week. So people are looking highly desirable.
Cool. All right. Well, I want to thank all of our guests for coming on. If you guys want to do one last pitch for your book, go right ahead. I'll leave it up to you guys, whoever wants to do it.
Well, I'll just take the time to say thanks for having us on and for supporting the book. I mean, it took me one email. You responded right away. You're like, we'd love to put this on our shelves. We love to support independent stuff. Black Box is good people. We got you covered. And, you know, that means a lot to us. You didn't see a preview of the book, but you're taking a shot on it. And, you know, that's not easy for a comic shop to do. So we thank you.
No problem, man. I mean, you've been to our stores. Like, our walls are not small.
Right.
We have a lot of room to grow a lot of that indie stuff, and a lot of people come for those indie books they shop with us because we carry that kind of stuff.
Right.
And you know, we like to support all kinds of indie stuff. Now, if you know, if the book sucks after two issues, sorry guys, but. But we'll do what we can to keep it going
fair
for
enough.
You. Anybody that I've seen buy Snake Eyes, G.I. Joe, or anything that remotely had like any kind of Japanese influence or ninjas in it at all, I was like, let me tell you about this book coming out. You want me to put you down for it? And I got like two or three people to sign up for it. So, or at least for issue one. So I made you some money. Hopefully it works for you guys. But again, thanks all of you guys for taking your time out for an hour on Thursday. You know, I miss all of you, seeing all of you together and having beers with you after shows. Can't wait till hopefully, you know, halfway through next year when we can start doing that again. Michael, it was great meeting you out there in California, and hopefully we can get you out on the East Coast sometime and hang out.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Thanks a lot for having me. I really appreciate it.
No problem. Bo, I will see you next week. Thanks everybody who is listening. Make sure you guys support your local comic shops no matter where they're at. Everybody has a job and we don't care about the stock market because we are small businesses. So support small businesses, keep these guys employed. Keep everybody employed and stay safe out there. We will see you next week where we don't have a guest. It'll just be me and Bo talking about random stuff and comics. So that will be awesome. And remember, we are taking Christmas week off. So check that out or check us out. And you can listen to back episodes on Spotify or on our website at ndcomics.com. Thanks again, guys. And
thanks, guys.
We'll see you later.